Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the invitation, and also to Alibio for making it possible for me to come here, this magnificent setting and this outstanding meeting. I'm going to split my talk in two distinct parts. However, the two parts are interrelated intimately. And this is because we academics, as well as industry, we've realized that if we practice plant biotechnology, we can do things in the lab, but if we have the desire or the aspiration to move things into the field, there are other factors and other players we need to engage in order to see that transition go forward. So, in my first slide, I would like to put biotechnology and genetic engineering in context. When I talk to people in the streets, they think that biotechnology came out of the blue. Well, that is not the case. As we all know, it's part of the continuum started millennia ago when our ancestors decided to stop being hunter-gatherers and they decided to settle down, form communities, and they started domesticating plants and animals, thus laying the foundations for agriculture. And of course, humans recognized how important animals were in terms of facilitating agricultural activities. We moved through the Industrial Revolution, mechanical power, the rediscovery of Mendel's laws, the Green Revolution, and finally, biotechnology. So I hope you can see that we are talking about improvements in agriculture which allow increases in productivity and also looking at sustainability issues as well. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Golden Rice program that was started by Peter Bayer and Inigo Rodriguez many years ago. That program is the first tangible example of a real benefit of nutritional enhancement in a stable crop. So in our lab, we decided to do something similar in maize. And essentially, we look at maize varieties which are adapted to sub-Saharan Africa, mostly white maize varieties. And through a comprehensive genetic engineering program, we've been able to recreate not only the vitamin A biosynthetic pathway in white maize and get maize plants which accumulate very high levels of beta carotene, but also we can create plants which accumulate additional carotenogenic vitamins such as lycopene, zeaxanthin, and lutein, but also other vitamins such as vitamin B9 or folic acid, as well as ascorbic acid or vitamin C. And the important point here is that we can deliver all the recommended daily intake for beta carotene and folic acid within 100 to 200 grams of grain. And in that same amount, we can deliver about 20% of the recommended daily intake of vitamin C. We now have what we refer to as multivitamin corn 2, which in addition to the biosynthetic pathways for these three vitamins, we also have the biosynthetic pathway for vitamin E. So we have in hand multivitamin corn, which accumulates all these vitamins, and now we're in the process of identifying partners in South Africa primarily, to see how we can deploy this material in communities which might benefit through its use. So the approach we are using is based on combinatorial genetic transformation, which calls for the introduction of multiple unlinked transgenes in a combinatorial manner and recovery of a population of plants which contain different combinations and permutations of the input transgenes. You can get a number of different outputs out of such a program. If one is interested in particular metabolic profiles, you can select particular transgenic lines accumulating specific profile of vitamins. But in my mind, the value out of such a program is to look at the entire population of plants one might recover out of these experiments. And essentially what we have in hand is the equivalent of a mutant series, which allows dissection and recreation and extension of metabolic pathways which may or may not be present in one and the same transgenic plants. And of course, once we understand how these pathways are operating in a plant and how they may or may not interact with endogenous metabolic pathways in plants, we are able to design even more refined strategies for achieving even more precision in our engineering. Our plants are very stable in terms of expression and accumulation of all the vitamins. We are in the seventh homozygous generation. The plants perform very well in the field. Living and operating in Europe, we cannot even dream of carrying out a field trial in Europe. So we had to do our field trials in Lafayette, Louisiana, which is not prime maize producing country. Nonetheless, the results were very good. And next year we'll be doing field trials in China, India, and I hope within a year and a half in South Africa with collaboration of scientists at the CSIR in Pretoria. In addition to vitamins, we're also attempting to engineer zinc, iron, calcium, and selenium in the same plants using similar approaches. And unfortunately, I don't have time to describe where we are with this program. If anybody's interested, I'll be happy to talk to you later on. Now, for the second part of my talk, which I think is perhaps even more important than the first, and you may or may not agree with what I have to say, my disclaimer is that what I'm giving you is some personal thoughts and reflections. I made it into a hobby to collect newspaper cuttings, bashing genetic engineering in many different languages. I don't have one in Hungarian, but I have them in French, German, Italian, Greek, and even Chinese. So for the purposes of this presentation, I'll show the English version. And what I would like to highlight is some anecdotal facts which those of us living and working in Europe had to live with. The first point I would like to make is the fact that we have double standards in terms of regulating transgenic crops in Europe. We have a very different standard for cultivation into the field to that that's applied to imports. So European farmers are put out of business by the very people who allow American, Brazilian, Chinese, Indian farmers to grow the crops that we could be growing in Europe, but unfortunately, this is not permissible. The other thing I would like to highlight is the debate between organic farming and other types of farming. I'm not against organic farming. As a matter of fact, I also like to eat produce which are not contaminated by pesticides and other chemicals. However, there are considerations which need to be taken into account if one might propose to use organic cultivation for massive scale of production, especially on a global scale. The very body that criticizes genetic engineering publishes periodically reports which essentially state categorically that products of genetic engineering not only are safe, but they are even safer to those produced through conventional means because of the draconian rules that are being used to regulate these products. The issue of antibiotic selectable markers. This is an issue which the European Union is trying to push forward. As a matter of fact, we are very close to banning antibiotic selectable markers from transgenic plants because of fears of horizontal gene transfer to bacteria, which has yet to be demonstrated, and other factors. What I find curious, a little bit amusing, is the fact that the genes we are using, or most of them, that we use as selectable markers in plants, especially antibiotic selectable markers, are derived from bacteria which are already present in nature. So these antibiotic resistance genes are already present in nature. I would like to quote a statement from one of my favorite contemporary American philosophers, which in my mind captures European policy in regulating transgenic crops. And I would like to read it to you with your permission. When the search for truth is confused with political correctness and advocacy, the pursuit of knowledge is reduced to the quest for power. And essentially, in my mind, this is what's going on in Europe at present with regulations of transgenic crops. So I'm sure, or I hope you'll agree with me, that plant biotechnology has a huge potential to contribute to the substantial expansion of agricultural productivity, aiming towards food security and poverty alleviation in a sustainable manner. The problems that we have to deal with now are political and economic in nature, and this is where I believe scientists have a very key role to play to influence policymakers and regulators to make rational decisions based on science. This is our group in Lleida. We have a very young and enthusiastic group of scientists from 9 different countries. They are all involved in science, but they are also involved in published papers which are trying to inform and influence policymakers. And I would like to leave you with another quote. And the quote goes like this: if you desire peace, cultivate justice. But at the same time, cultivate the fields to produce more bread. Otherwise, there will be no peace. And of course, these were the closing remarks from Norman Borlaug when he got the Nobel Prize for Peace in 1970. And of course, Norman Borlaug was not a molecular biologist, he was a conventional breeder, yet he had the foresight to appreciate the power of genetic engineering and biotechnology in combination with conventional breeding and other technologies. With that, I would like to thank you for your attention.